Hi, I'm Kristen.
And I'm her little brother, William.
We're from the podcast Guide to the Unknown, where we only talk about scary stuff and have a good time doing it.
Come join the scary fun, everyone.
Wherever you get your podcasts, you'll find Guide to the Unknown.
Hometown Ghost Stories contains serious and often distressing events and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Horror movie prequels are becoming a gigantic thing in this industry over the last few years, and the movie Pearl came out on the same year that its predecessor came out. So without letting Dave or Jesse get into like some sort of 7 or 8 minute monologue, we're going to cover the movie, let you know what we thought about it on this episode of Horror Movie Reviews from Hometown Ghost Stories. Welcome in, everybody. I am your host, Rob. I am joined, as always, by Dave Wilkins and Jesse Wilkins.
What's going on?
And today we're covering the movie Pearl, which, as I said in the opening, is a prequel. It's kind of weird because it came out less than a year before the original. They shot all of these movies like back to back to back to back to back just to get them all done, which is an interesting concept because you had no idea what the first one was going to do, X, which we reviewed. There will be spoilers for X in this movie, most likely. There's definitely gonna be spoilers for Pearl. Just want to get that out of the way now. But Dave, you want to hit us with a synopsis for this?
Pearl was written by Ty West and Mia Goth and directed by Ty West. Trapped on an isolated farm, Pearl must tend to her ailing father under the watch of her mother. Lusting for the glamorous life she's seen in movies, Pearl's temptations and repressions collide. So typically, I find prequels to be pretty disappointing, and that was not the case with this one. I actually can't wait to go back and watch X now. I just watched this movie, I've just finished it 20 minutes before we started this review, and I was thoroughly impressed with it. The film gave us a unique look into the origin of the villain from the first movie, and it really helped us understand the character and I think what made her the way that she was. This movie was well written and well acted pretty much all around, but I think that this movie was absolutely carried by Mia Goth's absolute just legendary performance in this movie. I was blown away by her ability to portray the character that I think was written, that she actually had a part in writing for this movie. She was not a writer on X, but she was a writer on Pearl, which I think is pretty cool. And I think that she's definitely got a future in writing for horror movies. And I was just pretty much blown away, mostly by her performance in this movie, but all around, I thought this movie was really genuinely good.
What about you, Jesse?
Yeah, I thought it was solid. I mean, it's A24, so it's going to drag in the beginning, which I thought it kind of did, or it took a while to build up. But overall, I thought it was good enough. Her performance was phenomenal. I mean, she acted the hell out of this role. So Mia Goth did a phenomenal job. Actually, I don't think there's any bad actors in this movie, which was good. And we didn't have to deal with an old lady who's not an old lady in this movie, who was also Mia Goth in the last movie. So that was kind of my issue with X, was just cast an old lady, which, I mean, it made it make more sense with this one. And you kind of saw hints towards that was going to be the case in the last one. But it was solid. I mean, it made sense. It flowed nicely. It got progressively more messed up as the movie went. And it ended without being too chaotic, which I always appreciate in a horror movie.
It's true. It did. I thought it ended pretty... Let's get into the ending. Just kidding. We could, but we could do whatever we want. This is our review. Nice. But Rob, what are your thoughts? I particularly want to hear your thoughts on this one because you are not only are you typically a disliker of the prequels, but you're also a disliker of villain origin stories. So,
yeah, usually both of those things are terrible. You generally don't need to know about the origin of a villain, and you definitely don't need to know about it after the fact of seeing what they've already done and seeing their ending. Like, usually it just feels like a cash grab, right? It's like, well, we ended this character, so how do we still make money off of it? Oh, we'll just do a prequel, right? Like, and we'll go to the origins. And it's like, well, I don't need to see the origins. I don't find that the case in this one. And it's for multiple reasons. I think you didn't really get a fleshed out character of Pearl in the movie X. Like, there's some character development there, and you're kind of seeing the peak, like the ending, the swan song of that character. And you never got to see the crescendo, like the upward arc of the character. You're only seeing the demise, right? You're never seeing them in their full glory. And the other thing I really liked about the difference of this movie is it doesn't look anything like X. This movie, like visually, is very bright, very striking. It looks very, I was watching and I'm like, this looks like The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
Is what I kept looking at as I was watching the movie. I'm like, I love the visual representation they did in this movie. Like the color, like the filtering, whatever they did was amazing. It like, it gave you that, it still was high definition. It still looked good, but it felt like it was set in the time period that it was supposed to take place in. Like it just gave you that feeling of that era.
Yeah, I actually have that in my notes, or had it in my notes as well, was the lighting and the coloring in this movie just was not something you'd see in a typical horror movie. And we talked about this with Smile, where a lot of the kill scenes and a lot of the scariest scenes happened during the day and were shot in broad daylight. And all of them in this movie were shot during broad daylight and in the middle of the day, which is vibrant colors. Gave me kind of like a Suspiria feel. You know, you had that like, yeah, almost like that 1970s Technicolor. Yep. It did not feel like 1970s Technicolor. But you know, it was kind of, it was just, everything was so bright and red. But the scenes that were shot in the dark, like for instance, that one, it wasn't really like a horror scene, but it was a fantastic scene, was that during the storm at the dinner, mm-hmm, dinner table, where you got a really, I thought, another excellent acting performance by the woman who plays Ruth, Mia Goth's mother in this, Pearl's mother. And that was one of the best performances in the movie, I thought, by her. And it was, I think, unfortunately, overshadowed by just the Mia Goth's overall performance in the movie. But definitely not one to not be mentioned. That was really good. But my point is, like, that was one of the only scenes that was really shot in the dark. And everything else, like all the horror scenes, were shot in broad daylight. There's one in particular. It was the tracking scene with Pearl following her sister-in-law, the blonde girl with the axe, just, mm-hmm, no music, just following her down the road. Yeah. It's just really creepy. And I really like the way that was shot. But yeah, the scenes with the alligator and everything were just, they're all shot in broad daylight, full color. And it was really unconventional, but pulled off, I thought, masterfully.
It was, yeah, another movie that really didn't have to have things happen at night. And we kind of brought that up about Smile, where it was like anything can happen at any time. Because of this is a different kind of movie for that, because in a movie like this, you kind of expect creepy things to happen at night. And this is a little bit different than X, because in X, a lot of the kill scenes did happen at night.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm not entirely sure if any of the kill scenes really happened during the day. I think they might have all been at night, but it's not a movie that I had to do it. And this one was, I give the credit for it. And it kind of matched with the rest of the movie, like you guys were saying, where it's very bright, very colorful, very red. And that was kind of the style that the movie was shot in. And that's where most of the kill scenes happened. And I agree, the woman who played Ruth, that's Tandy Wright, she played the mother, and she was consistent through that whole role. And I don't know if she was German or what that accent was, but
very German,
very, yeah, strict mother. And the kill scene with her was pretty brutal. Obviously it was dragged out, and eventually she died. Did she end up finishing her off, or she just kind of let her succumb to her injuries?
I think it was implied that she let her succumb to her injuries. But, mm-hmm, you never saw her die. You just saw her toss the limp body down the stairs. So if she did kill her, it was off screen. But I mean, she was definitely the result of her death. Or she, right, was the cause of her death, yeah.
She was done for anyways.
To go back into her character arc, like as you're seeing the movie start, like you already start to see the mental psychosis of Pearl, right? So you know it's there, you see it right away with the pitchfork. But the mother, you almost feel like she's just being this overstrict mother, right? But her arc is she knows what her daughter is. And what she's trying to do is A, hide her from the world, and B, keep her as under control as she can, because she doesn't know what to do with her. Who would?
Right.
Who would know what to do?
She's a monster. And you got hints of it early with, I think she killed the goose first, and she's killing the farm animals. She steals one of the alligator eggs and just brings it back, and you think she's gonna, like, I don't know, mother this thing and nest it and wait for it to be born, and she just like goes up and just like, pop. It's like, just
that was a great scene, because they coupled it with her, they used it as a metaphor for her rage that her husband left her and went to war. And it showed him walking down the street. And as she squished the egg, it showed him get basically hit with a landmine and explode, which I think was kind of a, like I said, a metaphor for her resentment towards him for abandoning her on the farm when she thought that he was going to be her ticket off the farm.
Right.
Yeah. And Mia Goth's performance, as you both have alluded to, is just amazing. I think it's such a great performance to show that some people are just broken, right? Like they are just unfortunately broken and we don't know how to help them. We definitely didn't know how to help them in, I think it's the 1910s that this is taking place, or the 1920s. So it's
1918.
It's like a very sad thing, but you also can't really feel too much compassion for her based on what she's actually doing. And I did like a lot of the scenes where you went into her mental psychosis, right? Like what she's actually envisioning rather than what's actually happening. The mm-hmm. dance scene, for instance, right? The dance scene, normally not my cup of tea. I'm normally not into the dancing and the singing, especially in a horror movie. It would feel normally very, very out of place. But in this particular movie, it fits perfectly. It shows you what she's envisioning, how she thinks people are seeing her, or how she wants people to see her. And then it all comes crashing down, like right after you see that.
And it all tied in. It tied in with the projectionist, mm-hmm. tied in with the theater, her love for the theater. It tied in with X, because you had the projectionist who like basically introduced her to adult films. And then obviously they have their little affair, and that doesn't end very well for the projectionist.
Which was a great scene. With that scene with him kind of putting it all together that she is not, you know, playing with a full deck. Mm-hmm. Was a really great scene, particularly in the barn where she realizes that he sees something in her that her mother saw, and she starts to panic, and she kind of like a switch goes off. And I thought that was a really good, it was really well written and well acted, that particular scene. And that's kind of where the movie's picked up and started. You saw which direction it was kind of going in.
Yeah. So I think the movie overall, again, for someone that doesn't like prequels and doesn't like, you know, that type of, because it feels like a cash grab, this one doesn't. For whatever reason, this feels very, it does feel like it should have came out first almost, right? Like it's just so good. It's such a great character development of your villain that it could have been the first movie. And I think you can actually watch Pearl before you watch X. It might ruin one little teeny bitty thing, but I don't even think it's that big of a deal.
Are you talking about the car?
No, I'm just talking about
that. You know that the old woman will be the killer.
Right.
Oh,
it's the woman over the husband.
Yeah, because when we watched X, I had your first implications are that the husband is the bad guy and the wife is just a nice old lady. Creepy, but nice old lady. So you're right. Yeah, it could spoil that, but I could see it going the other way around where you could definitely watch Pearl first and then watch X. And it tied up some things that you were waiting to see. Like they never really said why there was this random old car just sitting half submerged in a pond. And then they obviously solved that with this one with the projectionist. They just dumped his car in the pond. Didn't do a very good job of hiding it, but I guess at this time period, there's no reason for authorities to show up and search the property, and she can get away with these kind of crimes.
So we got to hit on a couple of key scenes. What did you guys think of the scarecrow scene?
I thought it was disturbing and interesting, and I thought you kind of got, it was part of her character arc, her overall character development, and it kind of gave you a glimpse into X, that one scene where she's dancing with the kid in front of the car, right? When you find out that she's the killer in X, and I think it was kind of a throwback to that scene. It was a very weird, uncomfortable scene. There was a lot of very weird, uncomfortable scenes. There was the scarecrow scene. There was the scenes in the bathtub with her father, which I thought were pretty weird. But all of it, I think, was part of them building her character and kind of painting her into the character that she was.
Jesse?
Yeah, weird, but probably necessary. I mean, I was fine with it. I mean, it was just turning her into, you kind of get these little ideas that she's a bit of a sexual deviant and just wants to bang scarecrows. I mean, we've all been there.
Yeah.
who hasn't? I think this is one of the main scenes that the color of the movie came into play perfectly.
Just you would pay attention to the color of the scene during a weird scene like that. You strange person.
It just fit the backdrop.
I'm on Amazon Prime looking to buy a scarecrow and you're just paying attention to the color.
Just paying attention to the contrast and everything. Yeah, you know, like really looking at it for a movie review. Shame on me. Shame on me.
Yes.
But I thought just everything kind of ties together great for what that movie is, like how uncomfortable it is, as you alluded to, Dave, really diving into the psychosis of Pearl, the color, the contrast, everything about it just really is when it kind of set in for me, like, okay, now I kind of know where we're going with this movie and how we're going to develop this character a little bit. Not that there wasn't still more surprises to come along the way, but it really let you into who this character was, I thought, as that. That's why I bring the scene up, because I thought it was a very important scene, because I could see people being turned off by that scene, you know, of all the scenes in the movie.
Yeah, it was one of the more definitely intentionally disturbing and uncomfortable scenes. And it wasn't the only one in the movie, like we mentioned, but it was one of them. Another scene that I think is worthy of mention is the end, where after she props her dead parents up at the dinner table, and you have the visual of the rotting pig as the centerpiece with the maggots coming out of it, and you have the two corpses and she's there. And then they go through this whole thing where kind of everything's like split screen, and you get like symmetrical mirror images of things. Like you had the pig on one, you had her walking down the hallway in the red dress with the split mirror screen. And that was intentional. And that's actually a very creepy way of shooting something. The human psyche is freaked out by perfect symmetry for some reason. And that is something that is used over and over. So you had it in actually the cover of the 2009 Orphan movie. You had Isabel Furman's face, and there's something about it if you look at that, and it's like, why is this image so disturbing? And the reason is because it's not just Isabel Furman's face. They cut it in half and mirrored it, so it's actually just a perfectly symmetrical shot of Isabel Furman's face, and that is intentional because it's supposed to make you uncomfortable. And for whatever reason, humans recognize perfect symmetry as something disturbing. And I think that was intentionally put in this scene. I thought it was really well done, and I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I wasn't going to bring that one up, but now that you refresh my memory on it, it was quite disturbing. And I'm not even going to attempt to do justice on it as much as you just did. So I'll go to Jesse if he has anything he wants to add to that.
Nope.
Yeah.
I'm not supposed to follow that up with all Dave's science and studies. And I liked two.
All right. Do we want to talk about the kills before we start talking about the ending? Is there anything you want to really hit in on this?
The kills were fun. There was nothing like. I don't think anything I saw was like crazy or like wow, they're you know rewriting the way that slasher films are done. All the kills were pretty traditional. I did like that one scene where after she killed the blonde girl there of her being dismembered. There's no way to say that without sounding like a psychopath, but I thought it was I thought it was an interesting way to shoot it, because they had it like split screen with something else. And I thought all the kills were pretty traditional, but they were nicely done. It was fun.
I was glad that she didn't feed her father to the alligator, because I was like, we had an alligator kill in the last movie. And then I think she was going to, but her mother showed up, because I think she kind of saw what was about to happen there. And I mean, she still ended up killing him, but didn't feed him to the alligator.
Yeah, I didn't need any more alligator kills after the absolute injustice that was bestowed upon Mr. Goose at the beginning.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Mr. Goose.
Poor Mr. Goose.
Was a tragedy. I was not, didn't like that scene. Important, because it shows you, I mean, we're going to get into it in a second. It really starts hitting from the monologue, but the kills, again, nothing over the top, but I didn't want anything over the top. Her character shouldn't be over the top. Right? Like, that's not who this type of killer is. She's sort of a spontaneous killer. Like, she takes advantage of what's in the moment. She doesn't really plan out. It's not, you know, it's not Michael Myers. It's not Freddy Krueger. It's somebody that's just a bit unhinged, a lot unhinged. And they're not planning these things out. They're just, oh, there's a pitchfork here. Oh, there's an axe here. That's what I'll use. And I'll use it as quickly as I can, right? So it fits the character very well. All right, let's get into what I think is the most important scene of the entire movie, which is the monologue. And holy shit, was this amazing. So I watched this movie in the theater a couple weeks ago. Before we did this review, I went and found the monologue one more time just to watch it. And show me a better acting performance this year than that one scene from anybody at all.
Yeah.
Right? Like, right. She, like, it's just, it's one of the greatest, I mean, I'm willing to say it's one of the greatest, like, horror scenes ever. It's just, it's that fucking good. Like, excuse my language on it, but Jesus, like, it's just, how do you, and most of it's,
we're talking about the scene where she's sitting down with her sister and explaining everything that's wrong with her life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a message to her husband with her sister as the
surrogate. Yeah.
The surrogate. Yeah.
Who increasingly gets more and more worried as the monologue goes on.
Yeah. And I couldn't, for that whole scene, I just couldn't wait for them to pan back over to her, just see the look of horror on her face, which we didn't get. But I think she was basically, her character was just trying to play it cool. Cause I think she was scared, obviously, out of her mind, and rightly so.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah. That monologue was really, really, really well done. I think out of all of the movie reviews that we've done this past year, all of them, right? I think the one that I mentioned was like the best possible acting performance. Name me one that's better was the protagonist in The Babadook. And this probably tops that for me. So,
yeah.
Not just because of the scene, the whole movie, but this scene was obviously like the, you know, the highlight of her performance.
It puts it over the top. Like, she just absolutely crushes the scene. It's not a complete one continuous shot, because in the beginning they do cut to the sister like a few times early, but at one point it just, camera just stays on her and she just nails this entire monologue like in real time for the most, which is just I just wonder how much of it's just coming off the top of her head. Like, if she just has like an outline, I'm sure a lot of it's written, but you're not memorizing that entire thing, right? Like, it is a hell of, and if she does, then great. It's just a hell of a performance either way. It doesn't matter how she delivered it. She delivered it. And it just, that stuck with me more than anything. Maybe the post-credits thing, but the monologue itself really, really stuck with me after this movie.
100%. I agree. And you did bring up the post-credits thing, or not post-credits, it was during the credits, which was my favorite credits of all time.
Yeah.
What they did was, if you haven't seen it, was they have the credits rolling and they have Pearl had just welcomed her husband back home. Her husband walks into the scene at the dinner table with her dead parents' corpses propped up at the table and all the rotting food with maggots crawling over it. And he's just like, what the? And it just pans over to Pearl, who's sitting there just like with the most awkward smile. And she just holds it throughout like three quarters of the credits. And it's just, it's like a live shot of her just smiling and trying to hold the smile. It's just
tiny,
so awkward.
Bit closer to her face. It's just slowly, slowly zooming in. I loved the end of it. I was watching it. I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah. And I think even like a tear starts to come down her eye at one point. And it's just, it's so unsettling. You have all these brutal kills. Like, they're, you know, brutal in the sense that like they look like something that would really happen. And the most unsettling parts of this movie had nothing to do with killing, in my opinion. It was the monologue. It was maybe the scarecrow scene, but definitely the post-credits is very, very unsettling. And you went, and it's such a juxtaposition in the fact that you go from this monologue that's telling you everything to this straight shot of her saying nothing, but you still understanding everything.
Right.
Right. So it's just, it's amazing the way they did that. I just, you know, kudos to her for sure, and Ty West for just delivering this performance and making it a possibility.
It was solid. It wasn't too long. It was an hour 43. So we like the 90 minute marks here on Hometown Ghost Stories Horror Movie Reviews. So a little bit longer, but not too much longer. It felt like it was just about right.
I agree with that. And it was one that I didn't even realize what the runtime was. And when it ended, I was like, oh, fuck, it's over already. Okay. So you know it's good when they're packing, you know, you get an hour 40 or an hour 50 or whatever it was. And you're like, oh shit, it's over already. You know,
it was fine though. I mean, like, there wasn't like too much more that I thought they needed to do. I mean, they could have sprinkled in one or two more kills, but they didn't really need to.
My point was that it didn't feel dragged out.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like looking at your watch, you know, like, when is this going to end?
You can do more than an hour and a half as long as you're developing something. Like when you're doing like a straight slasher movie, like Michael Myers or Jason Voorhees movie, A Friday the 13th, I don't need more than 90 minutes. You're not developing those characters really, or you know what I mean? Like, so you can jump right into it. I know what Jason Voorhees is. I know what he's going to do. Start it off, finish it off. Let's get through this in 90 minutes and call it a day.
And the movie was good enough. Like you didn't need X to happen for this movie to be a good movie on its own.
Right.
So standalone, it's fine. Prequel, who cares? It was just a good movie from start to finish.
Yeah.
Are they doing a sequel to X too? Today?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
They shot it at the same time, I believe.
I know they shot these two at the same time.
I think they shot these two at the same time.
Oh, did they? Then I do think they're doing the sequel as well. But yeah, do we want to get into some scores?
Yeah.
Jesse, you want to hit us with your score on it?
Yeah, it's a 4.6 for me. It's up there. It was good. It was solid all the way through. I didn't really have any problems with it. Like I said, it was a little bit slow to pick up, but I knew that was kind of what A24 was going to do, and it was fine because this was a prequel, not a sequel, and you didn't have to have a bunch of kills right away.
You're right about the A24 thing. A lot of A24 movies are kind of slower builds. And for me, A24 movies are very hit or miss. And this one, what I think sets this one apart from other A24 films is we weren't getting bludgeoned over the head with some ham-fisted message that they want to get across, right? This was just a movie about a serial killer. And that's why, I mean, you get the typical A24 slow build, which I think was fine. I thought it worked out well in this one. But I really like that they didn't, you know, just try and beat us over the head with some message they're trying to get across. This one's an easy 5 for me. I think it's easily the best film of 2022 that we've watched so far. I mean, best horror film of 2022 that we've watched so far that we've reviewed. So yeah, for that, it's a 5.
Yeah, I do think the message in the movie that they're getting across without forcing it on you is just like, again, people are broken. Some people are just broken. And they know it, right? So like that, not to dive into what we've already talked about, I'm just going to give it a 5 because I love this movie. I thought everything on it was great. X was a good movie. I don't think I gave that a 5. It wasn't 5 worthy for me. This one is 5. I don't know if I'll ever give a prequel a 5 again, right? Like it's usually not my cup of tea, but this character was deserving of a prequel and an origin story, whereas most usually aren't. She definitely was. And the other thing I want to hit on real quick is you brought it up real fast earlier, is the chase scene. It's just so unsettling. Like it's such a good chase scene. She's doing the fast walk. She's not running. She like, it's reminiscent of other like big name horror killers. But the lack of music and just the pure feel of dread.
Yeah, it's the impending doom. You know she's going to catch up. Of course, she's stumbling with her heels.
Yeah.
You know what's going to happen. You know what's funny is I wasn't expecting a 5 out of Dave until we started talking about it, because obviously it sounded like you liked everything about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
When you had texted earlier, you said, I'm enjoying the credits. I said, he didn't like the movie. He's glad he's at the credits. And then I remembered what the credits were, which was her, you know, smiling into the camera, and it kind of made it better. So,
yeah.
If I had known you guys were going to 5s, I would give it a damn 4.6. What a piece of trash I am. Go to the 4.6. Jesus.
It's authentic, though. It's authentic. That's your.
It is authentic. Is it on the same level as some of the other movies that I've given a 5? No. And I'm a little bit more. I'm not as giving with my 5s as you two.
I do give out 5s like candy.
I don't think I
love a horror movie, I'm giving it a 5. It's easy for me.
Yeah, I don't think we give them out too much.
Do you think we guys go to a 10 scale? You think we're going to get some more? I don't think
technically it's more than a 5 scale because we break them into decimal.
We do, yeah.
Yeah, I think we're good with the way we do it. But yeah, I don't give out the 5s too often. I always try to find a way that even if I really, really like a movie, if I can find something to tick it off to give it a 4.8 or a 4.9, I try to do that. And I was actually trying to do it with Pearl. I'm like, what can I knock on this movie to drop it from a 5? And I was still trying to think of it as we did the review, and I'm like, I liked everything. There's nothing, I don't have anything that I can sit here and say, this is why I'm not giving it a five. And, you know, that's how I have to give it a five.
Like with X, one of the only reasons I didn't give it a five, and I think all of our scores are pretty high on X, mm-hmm. or one of the reasons that I didn't even consider it was just Mia Goth was playing the old lady as well.
Yeah, I couldn't do it because of that.
And obviously it ties into this one, but it still was unnecessary. She doesn't have to look like Mia Goth with bad prosthetics on.
Nope.
So, but, you know, if you want a full breakdown on how much we hated the casting of a young woman as an old woman in that movie, then go check out our review on X. We did review that one as well. Okay, so we had our ratings. Let's take a quick second here to thank our patrons. We have a couple of new VIPs. Mike B has upgraded his status to a VIP on Patreon, and Mallory K. Thank you so much to those two VIPs. We also have Jeannie R, Jimmy H, Justin T, Lisa J, Mom and Pops Wilkins, Stephen V, and the Demon King. Those are all VIPs. Now, this VIP list is growing.
How scared are you to miss a name now? Are you like terrified you're going to miss somebody?
I am. Yeah, you see me reading slower. Usually I just fly through it. I also can't read. Jake V, Stephanie A, Sydney B, Anthony Angry, Dave Rocks T, Brandon W, Captain McSlugs, Cody G, Kirillie J, Mark M, Matthew T, Mariah M, Papa Squatch, Rachel B, Sarah, Dave Loves Bacon R, Sarah W, Soph M, and Hooper. Thank you guys so much. If you guys are looking to get in on Patreon, we have a brand new batch of stickers that we're about to release. Very excited about that. We'll talk more about that on the Tuesday show with the live crowd. And also a bunch of cool perks. You get ad-free episodes. So if you're listening to this podcast and you're like, wow, I'm sick of hearing ads about sausages or whatever our ads are about, then that's okay. You can join Patreon and get ad-free episodes. I like our sausage ads. Every time the sausage ad plays, I'm pumped. I'm like, yeah.
I don't think I've gotten the sausage ad yet.
You haven't heard the sausage ad? I'm like, I get excited. We get that, and there's occasionally like a meatball ad.
So if you were listening to this ad free, guess what? We just hit you with a sausage ad anyways. Take that.
I didn't name the company.
For giving us money.
Just give me a chance to talk about sausages and meatballs. I'll do it. Hey, whatever our sausage ad company is, you want a live read? I'll do it. Anyways, moving on. So yeah, join Patreon for things like that.
Yeah. So now that we've said all that, do we have any closing thoughts on the movie, or did we kind of just hit everything? Jesse?
I think we covered it all perfectly. Mm. But if Jesse has something to add.
No, I think we pretty much covered it.
All right, so that is going to do it for us on this episode of Hometown Ghost Stories Horror Movie Reviews. We wanted to thank everybody, which we already did. You can obviously catch us every Tuesday night live, 9 p.m. every week. New episode on the podcast comes out on Wednesdays. You're going to be able to catch us on a few different things. If you go to Two Guys on Block Island, you can listen to kind of the origin of the show there. We kind of hit on that with those guys. We're going to be on Talk as Jericho again very soon. I'm going to be on Safe Room talking about Resident Evil 2 in the next few weeks. So, yeah, if you want to check us out on some other places and support some other shows that are doing great things, you can do that. But until next time, that's been Jesse, Dave, and I'm Rob. Peace.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.